when it comes to learning. And there's two things really important, but before I share the things that are important, I think it's important to know what doesn't work. And here are a couple of things that don't work. One of them is rereading text or rewriting your notes. Rereading text and rewriting your notes is an absolute waste of time when it comes to learning.
Tom Vorselin, thanks for joining me on the podcast today.
Thank you so much, Les Raymond, for inviting me.
You are officially the first study coach that's been on the Mindful Movement podcast. And it's like, what's interesting, first of all, is that there was a time where there was no such thing as a study coach. And now you could be a successful YouTube and Instagrammer being a study coach. And
yeah.
What a cool time to live we're in.
Yeah. Yeah, it's pretty awesome. And before we dive in, I just want to say thank you for having me on as well. You know, like, it's a privilege to be your first study coach ever. And hopefully in the future, there are many more. But, you know, like, what you're doing is amazing. So all of the hard work that you're putting in, I respect you for that. And I want to be part of that. So, you know, like, all of the listeners listening, do me and Les Raymond a huge favor and leave a 5-star review for the podcast. And then let's dive in and add some value.
Well, thanks. I appreciate that. I guess my first question is why? I assume that there was a problem that led you to be a study coach. Why? What led you to be a study coach?
Yeah. Yes. Really good question to start off with. So I'll tell a bit more about who I am, what I do, who I work with, who I don't work with, such that people can also figure out for themselves whether this podcast is something for them to listen to. So many students and working adults these days, they struggle with procrastination. They have bad study habits because nobody ever taught them how to learn. Therefore, they feel constant overwhelm. Maybe they fail exams next to their job to make that promotion, or they feel stuck and stressed. And my goal is to help indeed students, but also busy adult learners to master proven, scientifically proven learning and time management methods such that they can perform better. You know, like, they're more in control. And that, most importantly, that they reach their life goals when it comes to academics or career without burning out and wasting hours on tactics that don't work. We really value mental and physical health. So that is important. And the people that we coach with, they can be anything. Like, we work with students who are 18 up to people who are in their 60s and they're making a change in their career still. And this can be in the field of nursing, engineering, business, psychology, accounting, law, all across the board. And the most important challenges that we indeed help with is dealing with the procrastination, bad time management methods, and not knowing how to learn to get them into, you know, feeling in control, taking action, and succeeding in these areas.
That's interesting. The idea of not knowing how to learn. Like, we all grow, well, not all of us, but most of us probably grow up and go through some structured education system. And I don't remember if they actually, like, take a pause and say, this is why we teach you this way. This is how the body learns, or the brain learns, gathers information, creates, I don't know, maps of ideas or models in our brain. And then we're going to take advantage of that and use it this way. They just, you know, do as we tell you kind of mentality. Yeah.
Let this statistic sink in. It was shared by Gino, which is a Dutch neuroscientist, and he teaches about the science of learning in the Netherlands. And he shared that in one of his researches, he found that we spend around 13,000 hours between the age of 5 and 22 at school. And on average, 0 hours are dedicated to teach you how to learn. It's all about what to learn: biology, chemistry, math, economics, all of that. But they never teach you how. And what they then also found in their, well, American teacher curriculum, so when people are educated to become a teacher, learning how to learn was never really a part of what they were being taught. So therefore, professors back in the day, currently these days, it's, you know, it's getting more present and people are understanding the science behind learning a lot. But there's this majority of people, like, everything in that age group between my age, 20, 25 to indeed 60s, 70s, who have never had this information about how to actually retain information for long term, how to apply it, how to, you know, think critically. So I think there now is a big gap where indeed people are struggling to learn because they've never learned how to. But luckily, we do see an improvement in the academic curriculum for both high school students, primary school students, and also university students. But it's still not good enough yet, in my opinion. That's why my work exists, because people come to me and say, yeah, like, nobody teaches me this. Like, can you tell me?
Gotcha. Yeah, and I wonder how from generation to generation it's going to change. Like, I see kids now in many ways being so much smarter because while they're young and are so good at, like, just taking in, like, absorbing information, they have so much more information presented to them. So the whole idea of learning is probably going to continue to evolve as really we are evolving in, like, parallel to our environment, which is now, like, so the electronic world and the AI of things and the Internet of Things is so integrated into our environment that we're literally going to change along with it. What was it like? Like, what kind of student were you when you were little?
I was one of the worst students that was out there. So, well, okay, let's start with the fact that I am a so-called young student. So I started primary school when I was 3 years old. The normal age in the Netherlands is 4. So you go to your first class. This means that I was always, you know, 6 to 8 months younger than the other kids in my class. And especially in young ages, you know, that development is kind of rapid and the differences are quite big. So I was always barely, you know, making it to the next class. And in high school, that problem kept repeating. So in the first few months, I always failed a bunch of the exams and I always need to do a lot of work and effort in the end to just, you know, get an average grade that was good enough to pass to the next year. And also then in my final exams, I went in with 3 failing grades. So I had to compensate with the final exam to get an average that was sufficient for passing. I luckily did that with a lot of hard work. However, first year of university came. And my bad study habits and the fact that I was indeed younger and didn't know how to manage myself, it backfired. Like, I failed 6 of the first exams and I was devastated because I really wanted to continue in that program. But I just felt not smart enough. Self-doubt kicked in. Just, you know, hopelessness. Because my parents saw me studying at the kitchen table for hours and I had courses like anatomy and physiology, so quite heavy academic-wise and retention-wise, and I just couldn't figure it out. And, you know, my study advisor told me, yeah, maybe this program is not for you, or maybe you should do something else. And he was referring then to more like an associate's degree where you learn on the job or you start a job and then you learn a bit on the side. Which is nothing wrong with that, but there was like this intrinsic motivation for me to finish that program that I was in. And then my parents said, hey, Tom, we found this learning coach, this learning professor. Is that something that you're willing to try out? So I basically went along. He came at our place for a workshop and I went from this ever failing, always struggling student to passing all of my retakes and never ever having a retake again in my life, just because he taught me the learning science, the science of learning, how to manage my time and not procrastinate. And it was such a change in my life. Like, I felt confident. Like, I felt like I could take on the world. Okay, if I can do this, well, bring on this next challenge, because apparently now I have skills to organize and motivate myself or like discipline myself. I can learn things faster. And yeah, that change led me to where I am right now, like helping thousands and thousands of other people overcoming the same, you know, challenges that I had, because I think more people should know about how this actually works to succeed in life, not only academics, because, you know, you learn every single day.
Right. Well, let's touch on some of those skills. Well, I guess, like, first, where do people go wrong? Like, when you say procrastination, You said that a few times. Is that a main thing that you think people, that affects people? Like they're just putting off doing the studying or?
Yeah, absolutely. So what most people indeed do when they come to us, they say the biggest challenge is procrastination. And procrastination can have many reasons, right? There's like so many things that can influence why you take action or not.
Before we begin today's episode, I want to share something really special with you, something I've been pouring my heart into. If you've been feeling tired in a way that sleep doesn't fix, if you've noticed you're carrying tension all the time, or you're stuck in that cycle of pushing, achieving, caring for everyone else, and running on empty, I've created something just for you. It's a weekend retreat called The Deep Unwind, and I'll be guiding it in person at the beautiful Art of Living Retreat Center in the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina. This experience is for the helpers, the overthinkers, the high achievers, the sensitive souls, the ones who are strong for everyone else, but craving a safe place to finally put down the heavy weight of responsibility and let their shoulders relax. Together, we'll spend the weekend slowing down and gently unwinding the patterns that lead to burnout and self-criticism. Through somatic practices, guided hypnotherapy, nervous system healing, and myofascial release, you'll learn how to feel safe in your body again. You'll learn how to soften your inner critic, and you'll experience how to truly rest, not just collapse or detach, but to deeply restore. You'll leave feeling lighter, clearer, more grounded, and more connected to yourself than you've felt in a long time. And everyone who joins us will receive a myofascial release kit with my favorite tools that I personally use and teach with, plus a signed copy of my book so you can continue the work at home. If this sounds like exactly what your nervous system has been asking for, I'd love to meet you there. You can learn more and reserve your spot at themindfulmovement.com/retreat. I look forward to welcoming you to The Deep Unwind.
If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations, and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it, most of all, is that even though it could work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space.
What we've seen are the biggest contributors to procrastination in an academic setting is first feeling stressed and overwhelmed by the amount of things that they have to do. So just imagine you're an academic, you're in medicine. You work a full-time job, you know, 5-6 days a week sometimes, rotations of 8-9 hours. And then you have an academic board exam coming up in three months. Okay, academic board exams are huge in terms of volume. Like, there's so much to learn. Sometimes it's covering 3 or 4 years of material, and people just freeze because of that insane amount and they don't know how to cover that. That is one reason. Another reason can be fear of failure. Because they failed an exam in the past, I talked to a guy the other day. He was doing ACCA exams, which is for accountancy. And he said, I failed like 4 years in a row. So I'm literally scared to start again because I'll probably fail again. That could be one. Usually these thoughts and these feelings, you know, feeling stressed, feeling overwhelmed, feeling scared, those lead to avoidance. And avoidance is then disguised as procrastination, and people, you know, don't move forward and they kind of like freeze or flight in that sense.
Right. Yeah, that's understandable. I mean, I would think there could be a ton of things buried underneath those habits too. Mm-hmm. But it's easy. Like I'm thinking about when I used to study in school, I was not a good, I mean, objectively, I was just not a good student. But it didn't bother me. Like, I wasn't upset at all. I didn't care. I didn't really like school, so I didn't really care. I didn't think it was that important. And I wonder how much cultural difference there is there. Like, I wonder if the culture around education is different where you grew up in the Netherlands compared to the States. In States, I think there's probably a good bifurcation of people that like take it really seriously, and then a growing population of people that are almost like losing respect for the institution itself. But either way, like when I would study for a test, I would definitely wait to the last minute. But I think it was, and I would do the absolute minimum I thought I had to do to get a passing grade. And I think it was mostly because I just didn't care. Mm-hmm. I wonder like how much of that stems from there. I'm sure, like you said, there's probably a lot of things that are driving procrastination. And I wonder if there's a cultural difference of like, what percentage of the population just don't care because socially or culturally education is valued differently from area to area. Not naming good or bad to that, but I just think there's probably differences. And that's probably why you see some like ethnicities in the States really perform really well as a whole, because there's a cultural component that comes with them as their parents or grandparents come to the country and like pass on those beliefs.
For sure.
Other than just putting it off, what about like mechanically almost? Is there anything that people typically do where it's just like not good use of the time?
Yeah, very good question. And first to, you know, kind of like tap in what you mentioned. For me, if someone comes to me, I don't care whether they are in an academic degree or whether they are learning something on the side, because eventually everything that we do in life requires learning in some shape or form. Because for you to become a successful podcast host, you had to do so many things, right? You had to learn how to indeed, well, set up a microphone. You know, you had to search content. You had to understand how to upload. You had to understand what the audience likes. You have to analyze which show does well, which show does well, topics, etc. Like, it's all learning eventually, because it's your analytical skills, your evaluation skills. So whether someone is
I
in school or not,
the majority of the things you just listed, I haven't done those yet, but maybe I will.
you just started recording. Well, that's also cool. But when I look at me, for example, now in a business setting, I still apply certain principles, because if I want to teach people something new, I would first need to master it myself. And for me to master it, I do need to learn it. And that goes through different principles and different layers. So I also work with startup founders. I work with entrepreneurs who don't necessarily have a curriculum to learn, but they just want to indeed grasp material faster and be able to educate their employees, and therefore, you know, build their business from that side.
Yeah,
up.
That makes sense.
So yeah, like for me, it's I don't judge whether your academic background or not. Like, let's just make sure that we educate ourselves on executive functioning skills that are important. So to answer your second question about the mechanics, if we look at learning science really as like a blueprint, there is a strategy. Like, all of our brains work for 90% the same way when it comes to learning. And there's two things really important, but before I share the things that are important, I think it's important to know what doesn't work. And here are a couple of things that don't work. One of them is rereading text or rewriting your notes. Rereading text and rewriting your notes is an absolute waste of time when it comes to learning.
Why is that?
Because it's quite passive. And I'm going to share in a second what is more efficient in terms of learning. But what you want to remember is that this is passive, like rereading something or just copy-pasting notes. The second thing that a lot of people do that wastes their time is highlighting. And then I mean, indeed, grabbing five different colors to highlight different things and how they are related to each other, also false sense of productivity. And it takes a lot of time, but it doesn't yield any retention. So it doesn't increase knowledge retention. Now, what does work is active learning. And active learning, if there's one thing I want you to take away, it means retrieving information from memory. So if we want to test that on the podcast right now as a listener or asking you this question, I can ask you, what are two methods that are not great when it comes to learning? I just mentioned them. Do you remember them?
Rereading and highlighting.
Perfect.
Pass the test.
Yeah, pass the test. So if you're ever wanting to learn more efficiently and effectively, recall information. So whenever you read something, okay, don't reread it again. Just close the book, close the notes, close the video or pause it and think, how can I explain this in my own words? Because all I'm doing right now is all retrieving. And I can retrieve this very well because I've been talking about it for 3 years, like nonstop, you know?
That makes a lot of sense, though. So like every page or paragraph or anytime there's like an important idea that you think is idea or that you think is important, just close the book and like restate it to yourself.
Yeah, that's a very good first step. And to, you know, elaborate on it more, the best thing that you can do is convert that important information into some practice questions for yourself such that you can retest yourself. So if you see bullet points or if you see a list, you can ask yourself, what are the five steps in the list? And what does step two mean? Or what does step three mean? Or what is the definition of this concept? And this all engages you into actively retrieving the information, which is really good.
And
like
I assume,
a bunch of research shows that.
Yeah. I assume, Tom, that that's like a muscle that grows stronger as you flex it. So
exactly.
Just the act of doing that gets you better at doing that specific thing.
Exactly. And this is really good for basic learning. So remembering and understanding. It helps a lot with indeed retrieving just facts. And, you know, when I explain it in my own words, I show that I understand. However, learning has multiple layers. And a lot of people stay stuck at this remembering and understanding phase, where really eventually if we want to, you know, they say knowledge is power, but I say knowledge is only power if you know how to apply it and use it. So we have to go to application-based learning. So how do we now do something with this knowledge? If there's a case where we get some output, are we able to analyze the results and evaluate them? For example, a doctor, if they have some blood results, okay, what does the numbers tell us? We have to analyze it and we have to evaluate whether or what treatment we're going to give this patient. And that way you have to start, you know, challenging yourself in the application, evaluation and analytical ways. Which is a bit harder to do, yeah.
So like if you're learning a language, as soon as you kind of remember what a word is, it's like applying it into a sentence.
A sentence, yep. And let me tap on that example. Let's imagine that you're learning grammar. And of course, remembering the rules of grammar is easy. The understanding is easy and maybe indeed applying it as well. Now, if you want to move it up in terms of, you know, learning layers, what you can do is these days with AI is amazing. You just ask AI, hey, I'm learning English grammar. I want you to purposely make mistakes, grammatical mistakes in some sentences, which I have to pick out and correct. because this gets you in a next layer where you are analyzing these sentences, identifying the mistakes, and then you truly know whether you really master it, yes or no. And then learning becomes really, really fun, in my opinion, because then you can actually, you know, correct people, you can teach that, you can, you know, become a grammar coach. Yeah.
Yeah, teaching it, I guess, is the ultimate level. Like, I know in my more specific field, I work in a gym for a long time now, and I was always learned to, like, try to learn the concepts as if you want to teach them. Like, if you really want to learn something. And it was like meaningful. Like, so when I was thinking about a concept, it was the, in theory, you could hear, like, let's say how to do an exercise, but if you couldn't, like, you would hit walls trying to get somebody else to do the exercise that you wanted if you didn't have a really thorough foundational understanding of what and why you're doing the exercise.
Exactly.
So you otherwise you wouldn't be able to communicate it in a way where the person that doesn't know it at all could hear those sounds coming from your mouth and get them to do exactly what you wanted. And it was definitely different levels. I also noticed, though, that people learn differently. Like, I remember many occasions where what would work for somebody, like, let's say a verbal cue, wouldn't work for someone else, and they needed a visual cue.
Yep.
And then some things that a visual, like, somebody might have so little, like, body awareness or something, that a visual cue was worthless, and they needed, like, tactile feedback. Like, they needed something to push on them so that they could push back. Like, their environment essentially needed to be changed with environmental stimulus put on their body. So there must be some individual variability to, like, how everybody's brain learns best, or like, whatever the path of least resistance for each brain is to learn.
Yeah.
And
yeah,
maybe, I don't know if that's genetic or upbringing or...
I won't know the answer for that, but you have indeed auditory, visual, and kinesthetic learning preferences. And the kinesthetic is more indeed like doing something with your hands, or like hands-on learning, and visual, well, of course, seeing something, hearing auditory, hearing something. The best thing in terms of learning is to engage as many senses as possible. So indeed, let's say you're learning about a wine, you want to smell and you want to taste the wine as well. Right, like that's when you can engage more senses to strengthen the learning experience. And with a gym example, yeah, like some people indeed have to feel the difference between doing a pull-up one way and doing a pull-up a different way. And then you can say, okay, do you feel the difference in which muscles are, you know, engaged? And then they say, okay, yeah, now makes sense. And yeah, it's playing around, because some people have to explain something, some people I have to show. So in our workshops, we always do auditory, we do visual, and we ask them to do it. So we apply it right away, such that we engage the different learning styles to ensure that everyone, you know, gets their best method in.
Gotcha. So you said there were basically two main strategies. Is when you lump all the, do you lump all these ideas into active learning, and that's one of the strategies?
Yeah, so the active learning is one of them. And the second one, we see a huge problem with this, especially with people, you know, for test taking and long-term memory, is that they don't take into account the forgetting curve. And you might think, now, Tom, what the heck is the forgetting curve? What a lot of people do, right? They read something, they hear something interesting, and they think, oh, yeah, cool. Like, I need to remember that. Within a day, you forget 60% of information. Within a week, around 80%. If not, repeated and actively recalled. So, example with a lot of working professionals who have an exam, they study something in week one, and they don't repeat it until week eight. And then in week eight, they have to retrieve all of this information, and they feel super stressed and anxious again. And they're like, ah, it's never possible. And they score 50%, where the passing mark is 60%. And that's because they didn't repeat. So how we tackle that is something called spaced repetition, which basically means we want to repeat information on strategic intervals. And strategic intervals would be ideally 1 hour after the first engagement of the material, 1 day later, 3 days later, 7 days later, and then we can extend it to 14 days, a month, 2 months, by actively retrieving it with any of the active recalling methods, because there's hundreds.
How do you come up with those intervals? Is there studies on that?
Science behind that. Yeah. First study was done in 1885 already.
Oh, wow.
So, yeah.
Off and on, I'm a guitar player, off and on. Mm-hmm. A few months a year, I like dive in and commit until I give up. But one thing I definitely notice is, especially when you're just picking it up, it's like, if I play just a little bit every day, I could just indefinitely get better as long as I keep up. I mean, 5 minutes, it takes very little. But then as soon as I stop, I'm fine for like a few days, and then it deteriorates, and it deteriorates fast after a few days. And like, if I go a month or two, I feel like I'm starting completely over.
Yeah, that's the exact principle explained in real life. Yep. Yeah.
Huh. So, like, it's, I don't know how many people listen are actually students, but if somebody is, like, where does learning come in for, like, right now, it's, you can learn about anything, generally. So, like, YouTube, which this will be airing on, is become such an unbelievable resource for people that like to learn things. But it's, you know, it doesn't really have the application, I guess. But the fact that we can kind of just have any idea come in your mind and look it up and start learning about a topic is, I mean, like I said, we live in an amazing time that we could do that. I mean, I've picked up like woodworking, and mostly it's from like watching some YouTube videos. But if I don't open my garage and like pull out wood and tools, like it's kind of meaningless. Like I'm not really getting a deep understanding. So I guess like that is the application for that. Like it comes in, I guess, every form, every, like you said, every career, everything we're doing, you have to learn. There's some learning curve that's going on. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what are the outside of, students, because I feel like in academics, that's kind of one total compartment, because they're generally structured where you have these courses that lead to these tests. So the idea is you want to get better at actually learning this stuff so the test doesn't freak you out. You don't put off the studying for it. You're more prepared and you do better on it. But for, like, I don't know how many people listen to this that are in school age. For, like, the average person that's not, how does, what does this look like in for other fields or common things that like people in their 30s or 40s or 50s are learning?
Yeah. Yeah. The majority of people that we work with is 29 and above. So all of these people are working full time and they're, you know, learning something on the side to either make a promotion or add something to their business. And indeed, they also don't have the skills, just like the students. The danger with self-paced learning, especially when you're getting older, is that indeed, usually it's like, okay, you follow this course, you can take the exam at any time that you want. And you just have to book in the exam. And this leads to a lot of people then indeed saying like, oh yeah, I'll start later, or I'll get this done in a week or 2 weeks time, and the procrastination hits. And I worked with people who literally made promotion after, you know, finishing a course or a program, and they could earn $500 to $1,000 per month more when they knocked out that exam. Some people delayed on that for 2 or 3 years. So just do the calculations. They missed out on like easily $20,000 to $30,000 by not taking action or not learning or not, you know, like moving forward with these exam. And when you start thinking about that, then it's like, oh, okay, actually, maybe I should be doing something regarding this.
Well, like, because, let's say, I'm trying to think of like the average, let's say you're a small business owner and you have a shop and you're busy and maybe you're juggling the schedule of some kids and such. Like, how does that apply? How do you take advantage? And you still need to learn things to get better at refining your business model or whatever. How do you apply your strategies in a lifestyle like that, where you have maybe, I don't know, an hour, let's say, is it like just first divert, like establishing time where it's like, okay, I'm going to put it on my calendar that a half hour twice a week I'm going to dedicate to like learning this topic I want to like integrate into my business or into my work? Like, what is it? What would it look like in a practical sense?
Yeah. So I'll give an example from my REIT, who was a 52-year-old business owner, right? She had her own business. She had three kids, teenage years, so 12, 14, and 16, had a dog to take care of. And she had an accountancy business, and she wanted to add a law perspective to her business, such that she would become the first established business in Ireland that had both law and accountancy combined. And she was able to do that. So indeed, as you can imagine, like crazy busy lifestyle, right? Kids, full-time business, 50 employees, and making sure that that works. So she came to me and she said, Tom, I just don't know how to organize it. So indeed, the first thing that we look at is, how do you organize life? What does time look like? And what do we have available? When is energy the highest? Is that early in the mornings? Is that at the end of the day of like a long working day while you're also, you know, coaching your kids on the soccer field, or indeed somewhere else? So that was the first thing that we analyzed. For the majority of the adult learners who are indeed in a practical setting like that, we figure out that it's early mornings. So they wake up early, and from 7 till 8, for example, they dedicate an hour to learning. And the most important thing that we indeed focus on is then doing the learning consistently, rather than half an hour here, half an hour next week. So if it's only 20 minutes a day or 30 minutes a day and not necessarily 1 or 1.5 hours, that's completely fine. Because as you mentioned with the guitar playing, if you do it daily, it goes up. If you do it sporadically, okay, it becomes like wonky like this.
Before we begin today's episode, I want to share something really special with you, something I've been pouring my heart into. If you've been feeling tired in a way that sleep doesn't fix, if you've noticed you're carrying tension all the time, or you're stuck in that cycle of pushing, achieving, caring for everyone else, and running on empty, I've created something just for you. It's a weekend retreat called The Deep Unwind, and I'll be guiding it in person at the beautiful Art of Living Retreat Center in the Blue Ridge Mountains in North Carolina. This experience is for the helpers, the overthinkers, the high achievers, the sensitive souls, the ones who are strong for everyone else, but craving a safe place to finally put down the heavy weight of responsibility and let their shoulders relax. Together, we'll spend the weekend slowing down and gently unwinding the patterns that lead to burnout and self-criticism. Through somatic practices, guided hypnotherapy, nervous system healing, and myofascial release, you'll learn how to feel safe in your body again. You'll learn how to soften your inner critic, and you'll experience how to truly rest, not just collapse or detach, but to deeply restore. You'll leave feeling lighter, clearer, more grounded, and more connected to yourself than you've felt in a long time. And everyone who joins us will receive a myofascial release kit with my favorite tools that I personally use and teach with, plus a signed copy of my book so you can continue the work at home. If this sounds like exactly what your nervous system has been asking for, I'd love to meet you there. You can learn more and reserve your spot at themindfulmovement.com/retreat. I look forward to welcoming you to The Deep Unwind.
If you've been listening to this podcast for a while, you've probably heard me talk about how important it is to regulate your nervous system. This goes for healing, for focus, for just overall emotional well-being. But the reality is that even if we know the tools to help do this, whether it's breathing or meditation or just slowing down, it can still be really hard to stay regulated throughout a busy day. That's one reason I've really been interested in the Apollo wearable by Apollo Neuro. Sarah and I both use this device regularly and have found it very beneficial. It's a small wearable device that uses gentle vibrations and they're designed to signal safety to your nervous system. What's fascinating is that those signals can help your body shift out of a stress state and into a calmer, more regulated state. What I like about it, most of all, is that even though it can work great alongside practices like meditation or breath work, the real value is that you can wear it throughout your day, even while you're at work, and just let it work its magic on your nervous system. The other standout use that I rely on is wearing it to bed. Not only does it help me fall asleep fast, but I often wake up around 3 a.m. and I can just tap the button on it and it will help lull me back to sleep quickly. If you want to learn more, check out the podcast episode with the founder, David Rabin, and you could explore more about the technology itself. But if you're someone that struggles with anxiety or feeling wired or overwhelmed, or you're simply looking for more nervous system support in daily life, it might be something worth exploring. You can learn more about the Apollo wearable and how it works and save $99 on a new device at apolloneuro.com/mindful or click the link in the show notes. I promise you won't regret this investment. I truly believe it's the best bang for the buck in the wellness tech space.
So it really depends on, you know, the situation of each individual that we work with, what their schedule and what their learning plan is going to look like. And that is how we tailor our one-on-one coaching programs towards that when they come to us.
Gotcha. It's interesting you mentioned the time of day. That makes a lot of sense. I mean, the brain is already very, like, metabolically expensive, energetically expensive to run. And the act of learning, especially like active learning, new things where novel stuff is probably, there's a huge energy demand. So doing it when you're fresh is likely to be more productive,
yeah,
I would think.
Yeah. And for some people that's difficult. So that's where we establish accountability relationships, you know, right. Like they have to clock in with us. They have to send us a quick selfie that they're doing it. And if they don't do it, we have either, you know, a punishment, quote unquote, or we also create rewards for them, you know, like, gotcha, have a nice dinner with the family at the end of the week, making your favorite dish if mommy has completed all of her personal, you know, goals and stuff like that. Yeah.
It makes me think about nutrition too. I mean, I've been on like a metabolic learning binge for the last few years. And like, there's nutrients that are considered like memory molecules, if you will, like the things. And I wonder, like, I know personally, I have seen a difference when I supplement with choline that is, I guess, considered one of the like memory related nutrients. Like, it makes a difference. I don't think it's placebo. I've done it, like, I have enough reps where there's a different level of like sharpness or cognition or recall that I have when I have that in my system. And I wonder how many people out there might struggle and they're just like underfed or or like missing a micronutrient, or maybe, yeah, especially like if they're either central to, you know, thinking and cognition, or just or nutrients that are like central to energy production. Because the brain, where I assume we're doing most of our thinkery, is just so energetically dependent.
Yeah, consumes about 20% of your daily energy, the work that you do with your brain. So indeed, nutrition, well, you as a personal trainer, I think you have a lot more knowledge about nutrients and stuff like that than I do. It is something that we take into consideration. What does your sleep look like? What does your indeed diet look like? What does your you know, your exercise look like, because all of these have an impact on performance. And that is both brain performance as well as health performance. Because if you're in a bad mental state, if you're in a bad physical state, it's going to directly impact anything that you do. So it is part of our program, but I'm not going to count macros for people and
right,
say,
right,
like, yeah, you have to improve on this. Yeah, yeah.
But everybody could probably relate to like the brain fog you have after a terrible night's sleep.
Exactly.
And that's going to be counterproductive, obviously, for, you know, all kinds of things. So when you say you're a program, so you're doing one-on-one coaching where you're coaching them on like implementing a strategy to learn whatever they want to learn. And how long does that, is that usually run for like a certain period of time, or
yeah,
are they like 8 week packages, or how does that work?
Yeah. So indeed, the, when we just explained that learning requires, you know, developing really a system and a strategy, this is not something that I can teach you in like a 1 hour video. And the biggest problem that we see most people have is proper implementation of the strategies explained. So how we tackle that in our program is indeed a minimum of 12 weeks, so a 3 month program, such that we can establish the system and the strategy and people can experience it. And hopefully they have maybe indeed an exam, or they have some type of thing that they want to, you know, get done, and that we can get results for them on that, such that after this 3 month period, honestly, like 90% of our people, they are good to go by themselves and they can continue implementing our learning system, their time management skills and the momentum that they've created by themselves without, you know, relying on us for the rest of their lives. So it's really a, yeah, teaching a system, 3 months, good to go, and, you know, continue implementing the principles that we taught you, and you should be, yeah, you should be fine, to be honest. Yeah.
Gotcha. What are you doing? Like, is there something that you're currently working on learning yourself?
Business.
So what does that look like for you? Is that like, yeah, dedicating time to watch like YouTube videos about how to run a business, or what does it look like?
Yeah, I think for me, the biggest learning curve right now is in terms of leads and sales. So, and of course, like we did pretty well in the last 3 years from a business perspective. I'm like generally proud of what we have accomplished in that sense. It's team management. So indeed, learning about how to manage and onboard new employees. And then I watch indeed content. Okay, like Alex Amosi, one of my favorites.
Gotcha.
You know, he has videos about, okay, you need to tell people what to do, when to do it, how to do it, and why to do it. Okay, if I work that out in my SOPs and I start teaching that, does it have a good result? Yes. All right, amazing. Indeed, working with webinars, analyzing the results. Okay, should we do it? Should we not do it? Should we change something? Different ads, different content strategies. Yeah, like continuous learning, watching YouTube. What are best practices right now? Can we implement it? Yeah, moving forward with that. So sometimes watching YouTube, sometimes just F it up and figure it out, which I learned from my coach. Yeah, a bit of both, both on that sense.
How do you see the whole AI movement like shifting the way people learn?
Mm. Good and bad. Good and bad. I think the majority of people now rely on AI to do a lot of thinking for them. And that makes us, it makes us literally dumb and relying on AI. So it's a blessing where it can take out, you know, a lot of easy tasks like summarize this piece of text and create this email based on this transcript or something like that. When it comes to learning, like I just shared with you, some rereading something is not necessarily going to make you learn. So a lot of people, they ask to AI to summarize a piece of text and they just reread that. What they should do is they should have that summary and just ask AI, create 20 practice questions for me such that I can test my knowledge. And AI can do that as well. And now we are shifting from indeed the only the passive consumption to also testing ourselves and actively retrieving information. And now AI becomes like an accelerator to create an infinite amount of practice problems and questions for you to see if you really understand and master the topic. It can come up with case studies. It can come up with indeed real life examples. And you can also just say it, okay, continue questioning me to deepen my understanding. And if you do it like that, you're in kind of like a dialogue with the AI saying like, okay, these are my thoughts. And it will say, okay, you got 90% correct. Here's the 10% that you missed. So this is the explanation. Here's a practice question on that. And you then start learning with AI instead of, yeah, just passively consuming the information that it spits out.
That is interesting. It's weird. Like, I remember, do you have kids?
No.
I have kids. No. I remember when they were little and they wanted to use calculators. And I thought that it was important that you knew, like, how to do the math. Like, it's great that you have the calculator, but don't, you know, use it to check your work. And now as an old, like, as I'm older, like, I don't know. I don't know if it matters. I mean, I wasn't using an abacus when I was younger. Like, I don't know if, as, you know, technology, like, every generation, you're starting off, like, the shoulders of the last generation. Like, you're building and building. And I don't know if we think something is important, it's because our brain is still anchored in a time that really doesn't exist. And we assign value to that. And I don't know if that value is real or just like a part of our identity in a way, and like a felt connection with a different time where it mattered to us, or we were forced to do it. So it's like, well, I did it this way, so you're going to have to do it this way. And like, I know that some people look at AI in like an education setting and think we shouldn't be using that. Like, don't let kids use AI to get the answer. And I don't know. And part of me, there's like a romantic side of me that's like, yes, they shouldn't rely on it. And also, it's like nothing stops this train. Like, the train is moving. It's
going. Yeah, and it's going it's, fast.
It's going fast. It's not just going fast. It's accelerating the rate that it's accelerating. And you know, what does that look like? Like, I could imagine a kid learning and they have their AI interface, whether it's on their screen, their phone, their watch, their humanoid robot that they're having breakfast with, an implant in their brain, whatever form it comes in. Not just being able to, in real time, tailor questions, like you say, but to get a read on where the weaknesses are based on the individual variability, so that the next question is always being customized based on what it interprets your highest need is to progress, and might be taking in information that's, you know, the expression on your face. Which way did your eyes move when you were looking for that answer? Like, what does it know about the different parts of our brain that we're tapping into based on what little micro muscles in our face are activating? It could look so weird. And it could be, it could be like totally dystopian in a way. It could also be like, oh, you spend an hour a day doing your education and you got everything. Now go play.
Yeah. Yeah. That's what the, that's
have
what
more
the,
time having fun being a kid.
Yeah, the K-12 schools in the U.S., I think they're doing that a lot. So they have like 1 or 2 hours of, and I haven't researched it in depth, but I believe they have 1 or 2 hours of AI-trained learning. So literally it's going to spit out problems for exactly, you know, the knowledge gaps of the kid at hand. And after the 2 hours, they're just going to indeed learn other skills, public speaking. They have to set up their own businesses. They have to teach the younger kids, you know, like indeed woodwork or something like that, you know, practical skills, soft skills. And then they see that these kids with the 2 hours of AI-based learning are scoring equally or sometimes even higher than the kids who are in the traditional school setting at this moment. And again, like, do some research on it yourself if you find it interesting. I just listened to one podcast about a lady who is like a director of a K-12 school.
Okay.
And I found it super fascinating. I was like, whoa, okay, so they are indeed, you know, playing around with the for the kids, just
and
yeah,
the
doing
kids
other
are,
stuff.
Everybody's so different. I remember my son, he'd be in school and he said, I just, like, he was really smart in like different ways, but he said, it's so dumb. Like, I go and literally half the time of class is you're waiting for the dumbest kid in the class to catch up to the average. Mm. And then they move on. And it's like, that's great for that dumb. And I shouldn't call kids dumb, but, you know, everybody's just different. But, you know, it's great that that's there, that resource is there for the dumb kid. But, like, everybody else is, they don't know what their capacity is. They don't know where their edge of performance is, because you can't push every kid to the right level where they're on the brink where they should be.
Yeah.
And AI, I think, is going to be able to do that. Like, I remember having a guitar teacher once that was very good at keeping me very on the edge. Is the second I felt like I learned something, he just pushed it. And it was exhausting. Like, mm-hmm. my brain would get exhausted, but it was really effective at learning really fast. But if you had two people, like, there's no way that that same strategy is going to work for two people at the same time on the same content that happen to be sitting next to each other. And AI is going to address that and really get the most out of kids. And hopefully, like you mentioned, they'll be more productive on those in-between times. Hopefully, as society, we don't, I don't know, program this thing. I don't know if we even have a say in it, I guess, but where everything is productivity.
Yeah.
And they leave out, like, silence and quiet time. And, like, how do you be alone?
Yeah.
And content. Yeah.
It's going to be an extremely interesting couple of years, I would say. Because indeed, when I look at, you know, the traditional education, like, okay, for how long is it going to be there? I think it's just ingrained in the system so much that it will take years before, like, it's really, you know, faded out. But you can literally learn anything online these days. Like, I'm currently interested in following a course about how to help people with ADHD or neurodiversity. And I can just buy a course online. I don't have to go into, you know, a real psychology program. Like, it's certified. I can get all of the information. Now, as I know how to learn efficiently and effectively, I feel pretty confident going into that course, also making the most out of it. And I work a lot with people. And people-to-people work is, I don't think, ever going to go away. So if I learn about, indeed, how to help neurodivergent people, if I help people with autism or things like that, this personal connection and my knowledge about how to help them live a more stress-less life or more calm life is going to be valuable. Yeah, like I said, always learning to be implemented in many different ways. Doctors will always be needed. At least I hope once you have maybe an emergency, you're like in the ER that you say, oh, yeah, this doctor had his degree with AI, like AI did his degree, or the doctor who has performed like 1,000 surgeries. I think which one you prefer, right? Like,
I don't know. Yeah. I think eventually it'll be a human. It'll be a robot.
Yeah, maybe.
That will, like, probably be probably more effective.
More.
And might have better bedside manner.
yeah. Maybe indeed. Like, I think it's indeed crazy to think about it, but it's definitely possible. And we can be scared about it, or we can, I like to look at, hey, what do we have right now? And, you know, like, let's make the best out of that because we're not there yet. But it can be for sure. Yeah.
That sounds great, the idea of learning about how to work with neurodivergent ADHD. I mean, I think that, first of all, that's a large population of people that I would think that the existing infrastructure to help has to have holes in it. You know, it's just, mm-hmm. it's not really designed, I think, on a population level to do that well. So that's great. And I would assume also that's going to be really rewarding for you as you could, and fulfilling work as you do more of that.
With the example where you, for example, well, labeled the kid as dumb, like, maybe he's indeed not dumb, but maybe he's indeed someone who learns better by, you know, practicing and doing things. And there's actually indeed two parts of the brain, left and right sided. At school, we teach people a lot to be left sided, which is analytical thinking. These are the things that you need to do. This is how to approach everything. Maybe this one kid is very right sided, very creative, and just can't connect. And he's not strong in, like, the analytical stuff. And therefore, he feels like he might be dumb because everyone else is moving forward. But usually these kids have other skills that all of these other kids don't have. But they're not being utilized because they're not,
right.
you know, discovered in the academic setting that they are in, or in the school setting, or in the work setting. Like, even people in workplaces, they are put into boxes like, you have to do it this way. You have to, well, they think, oh, but I have so many. Nope. You know, like,
and it doesn't help that you take young, energetic kids and get them to sit still in a chair.
Yeah, for like 8 hours. Yeah,
like that. Yeah. One day we're gonna look back. I do look back and be like, yeah, we got that one wrong. We got that one wrong.
Have you ever seen that picture of the changes across the years?
No.
All right. So you have an old telephone with, like, you know, the round thing that you have to dial. Yeah, yeah, and it's on a cable, and then you have the smartphone. Okay, huge change. You have the wagon and the horse, and now you have a Lamborghini Aventador. Right? Then you have a classroom with kids, one teacher in front, 30 kids in the back. And what does it look like right now? Still the exact same.
Good point.
So everything is like developing. However, for some reason, how we indeed teach and help, it's still...
Well, there's probably a lot of old forces that are still in play politically and monetarily behind that, you know, whether it be teachers union influencing politicians or, you know, it's or, you know, things lobbying politicians and how money is spent. But I think the writing's on the wall. Like, I think that's going to change. I mean, I know, especially since COVID, at least in this country, there's been like a big shift towards homeschooling. And maybe it would have been for different reasons, but some of it is because like that system is not designed that well for many things. And, you know, it used to be, if you want to learn things, you had to be where the books were. But now, because of the flow of information, that's not limiting. Like, I don't think the school system 20 years from now is going to exist anything like it does now. And I think that's good. And a lot of people will look at that as not good, but I think it is good. I think it is flawed. Once you have the flow of information, we as a society should harness that in a way that supports us the best. And there's costs to that too that we have to figure out. There'll be plenty of hurdles along the way that have to be ironed out. And hopefully the best ideas about how to do so will kind of rise to the surface and be implemented, and it won't be like deranged through politics or conflicts of interest. But we get to watch it all, you know, we'll be here to see how it all unfolds. And that'll be exciting. I can't imagine what it's like to be a kid today in school. Like, I grew up, you know, I'm going to be 49 this year. There was it was just so different. And now, like, I have little nieces and nephews that are in school, and, you know, it's just going to be so different. And they're going to look at things so like you just alluded, like, people are always going to want human to human connection. And I feel that there's part of me that feels very strongly about that. But I don't know if kids that are born today are going to feel that same way. Yeah, exactly. The phone.
Yeah.
Talk about the phone. I remember when I was doing a little pre-interview research on your YouTube channel. I know you have like a huge Instagram following. I'm not much of an Instagram guy, so I was checking out your YouTube channel, but you had a thing about phone use. And I mean, I think I have a little like guilt and shame and embarrassment around my phone use lately. I feel like it's getting worse. And part of it is because I like to learn things, because it's a source of information that I can learn things, whether it's woodworking or guitar or like metabolism or like all the things I'm interested in, or like how to pick a stock to trade or whatever, like all these things. But it has me glued to it, and not just glued to it, but very quick to pick it up. I think I'm picking up my phone and doing these quick checks way more than I want to. And I know that this is common.
Yeah.
You could touch on like, what do you think's going on there? But more importantly, like, what do you recommend in your field of work to help somebody improve on that?
Yeah. When it comes to the phone, you know, I think same with AIs, blessing and a curse, right? Like, you have everything at your fingertips, but it's also the biggest distraction ever developed. The question that I think you want to ask yourself is, if I look in the mirror, and would, you know, help or coach myself, can I justify the usage of my phone? So my phone usage is usually pretty low, but my screen time on my laptop is from 9 a.m. till, like, you know, like 9 p.m. because I work on it a lot. Is that healthy too? No, I also need my exercise in between, my breaks, going out for a quick walk, stuff like that. And I think when it really becomes, well, it sounds like you're very aware of it right now. And I think that is a really important point. It's, I think, just asking yourself, okay, am I doing indeed things scattered and unfocused, or would I, you know, benefit myself more by dedicating some specific time to stock research, for example, and then doing it on the laptop where you have literally 30 minutes on your day saying, okay, you know, I want to pick the best stocks and I'm going to do it, and not pick a stock, get a notification about, you know, what do we have for dinner tonight? You're replying for, okay, this is what we'll have for dinner. And then, oh, you know, you open something else and you're like, oh, I forgot that I was doing stock watching. And then you're just like scattered, makes it super exhausting. And you're indeed wasting a bunch of hours eventually. So, you know, boxing your, even your hobbies or your interests, and having some guilt-free time to actually spend on it, but then truly spending time on it, could be a solution. And the other thing is indeed figuring out what, you know, what is it that you're missing? Because usually the phone is a easy solution to get like cheap dopamine hits and stuff. Right. So it can be that, you know, there's, you might want to challenge yourself on something, but you feel a bit scared to really embark on the challenge, and therefore we're going to just, you know, scroll on the phone and procrastinate on something that we actually want to do. Where a good challenge for you, whether it's in your podcast journey, your business journey, your work journey, can also give you dopamine hits from a more positive perspective, because you're personally growing, learning, and doing something actually meaningful. So yeah, when I see myself, you know, like grabbing my phone more often, I'm always asking myself, okay, in which moments is this? And this is usually in a moment that there's indeed no time allocated in my day for a specific task. Even if it's watching a movie with my girlfriend, like I like to say like, hey, from 9 p.m., we're just going to watch the remaining of the movie and phone is away and we just spend time on the couch together. But throughout the day, sometimes, yeah, there's this 1 hour gap. And if I don't have a activity plan for myself, I find myself, you know, like checking Instagram or responding to messages or scrolling a bit or watching some YouTube football summaries, stuff like that. So for me, it's always like figuring out, okay, can I do something more meaningful? If yes, then okay, what is like what's holding me back? It's probably indeed fear of failure, not knowing enough. It's a challenge. TikTok ads is something that I'm learning about right now. And yeah, like tomorrow I have to dedicate some time, an hour, to do some TikTok, learning about TikTok ads. And I really have to put that in, because otherwise that hour is going to be dedicated towards other shebang,
right?
Which is not going to help me. Yeah. Or it does, but yeah.
Yeah, that's good advice. I mean, I don't want to make excuses, but I will. I'm in Maryland now, and it's been so cold. We've had this like stretch in the winter, and I don't want to blame it, but it makes it harder. I mean, when you say, you know, find something you want to do that's more meaningful, like I get a lot of value and meaning out of connecting with nature, just like a simple walk. Like I as I get older, it's just harder and harder to get out there when it's like 10 degrees
cold. Yeah.
And enjoy nature. And it keeps me inside. It keeps the phone closer. Like I'm very good at not looking at my phone if I'm outside. And and lately it's, and one of my main hobbies that I actually want to nourish, I want to do more of, is woodworking. But I don't have like an indoor climate controlled space. I work on my driveway and in my garage. Yeah. So it's like, we had like a few weeks ago, we had like one day where it broke like 45 degrees and I took advantage of it and got a wood project done. And it was really nice. But that was like 3 weeks ago for like a day. I mean, it's been pretty brutal. When the weather's nice, it's easier for me to like not fall to those distractions. But you do make a good point. Like, give yourself the time. Like, compartmentalize it is what you're saying. Like, give yourself time. This is your time to, whether it is to scroll, enjoy those little dopamine hits, or this is the time that, yeah, you want to learn how to do a new, type of woodworking skill or,
Thing, yeah.
whatever the thing is. So that it's just more structured, I guess. And you're
And it
not.
becomes more of a reward rather than a
Oh, right.
distraction.
Yeah.
Yeah. So me and my girlfriend like to play some video games.
Okay.
So our PS5 is often the reward. It's also a dopamine hit, right? When you get to play the game, you level up, new characters, new abilities. And like on a Saturday, we both like to work on weekends as well because we're in building phases. And it's like, okay, I'm going to do X amount of outreach on my Instagram page. And after that, I'm going to play a video game for 20 or 30 minutes. And then after that, we just roll again, like with the marketing or the sales or the
Gotcha.
whatever we need to do. So it becomes part of our routine as a reward rather than a distraction. Yeah.
Yeah, that's smart. Well, before we wrap this up, are there any other like tips or advice that you feel are meaningful that you want to get out?
Yeah, so I think one thing that we discussed at the beginning was that I have created something for listeners that if they are interested and they think, yo, even though I'm not in an academic setting, but you want to learn better or you want to organize your time better or procrastinate less on something that is meaningful for you. So I created something that I call a study breakthrough bundle. And it basically consists out of two things. But before I share what is exactly in it, I think it's important for people to understand indeed whether it's for them or not. If you have a kid who's a student, college, university, this might be for them. Or if you're a working professional who's working full time and studying on the side and you're indeed struggling with procrastination, overwhelm, stress, time pressure, and you want to learn more efficiently and effectively, remember things faster, be more consistent, then this is for you. And what I have bundled in the breakthrough bundle is proven science-backed systems to manage your time, beat procrastination, and retain knowledge faster. So one thing is a PACER study blueprint. It's an acronym, but you will learn about it step by step once you go through the document. It will help you study smarter in less time and remember more. And the second thing, which I think is the most valuable one in my opinion, because it's something that we only have available for paying clients at the moment. It's the Anti-Procrastination Masterclass series. And it's a combination of a video training as well as a workbook such that we can, again, apply what we're teaching. And it's designed to help you stop procrastinating, plan your week and build more and better consistency when it comes to learning or even doing hobbies, right? You can implement this for anything. So, if they want to access that study breakthrough bundle, I created a specific website for them. So it's Tom Vorselen, that's TomVorselen.com/movement, which is referring to your podcast. And then they can get the PACER study blueprint and anti-procrastination Masterclass series. I will also send the link to you. So if you want to put it in show notes or something like that, but it's tomvorsela.com/movement.
That'd be great. I
Yeah.
appreciate that. Thank you for offering that. And also, where else do people find you if they want to follow you on social or whatever?
I think as soon as they pressing Google Tom Vorselen, like the first searches is only my face, my YouTube channel, my Instagram channel, my LinkedIn, and my website. So I think we're pretty present, but yeah, like please connect with us on any of the platforms that their preferred consumption is at. So if it's short form, go on Instagram. If it is long form, go on YouTube. If it's on LinkedIn, when you want to read a bit more like blog posts or article posts, I would recommend to go there. We have something for everyone.
That's great. Well, Tom, I really appreciate you reaching out. I've enjoyed this and I think you have a lot to offer. I think you have a lot of good ideas, and I think it's exciting that your niche exists, and I think helps move things forward for the world. So I appreciate it. And for the listeners, always grateful for your listening. I hope you enjoyed the conversation. And if there's something that struck you in the conversation, please give us a comment, and would like to engage with you. Tom, thanks again. And I hope everybody has a great day.